Ryan, leading the way, almost missed the second sign, tipped on one side like a drunkard's dream, half hidden among some long-thorned brambles. Despite misspellings, it managed to announce, "Mom's Jerky, ahead on right, soon." The sky was like unpolished pewter, dismal and oppressive, casting deep shadows beneath the trees that pressed up against the edges of the track. A movement caught Ryan's eye. His hand dropped in a conditioned combat reflex onto the butt of the Sig Sauer as he half-turned, crouching slightly, perfectly balanced. Behind him, everyone reacted fast. Blasters were drawn, and everyone stopped, looking around them. In among the blackness, Ryan caught another flicker of deeper darkness, the glint of golden eyes.
"What is it, dear boy?"
Ryan gestured for silence, concentrating on whatever it was that had snatched his attention. The creature was larger than a beaver and smaller than a hunting dog, short-legged with a long, scaly tail glistening wetly behind it. It moved slowly, parallel to the blacktop. Ryan's very first thought had been a cougar, but it didn't seem to be making any attempt to conceal itself from him. There was something in the way it moved that put him in mind of a rat, but he'd never seen a rat that size. Not even in the muddy, rad-cancered hotspots in the bleakest wilderness of Deathlands.
"Look on the other side."
JB pointed with a stubby muzzle of the Uzi. Whatever the creature was, there were two more of them on the left side of the trail. Ryan stood still and waited. Then he felt his finger tighten on the trigger of the blaster, the barrel of the Sig Sauer swinging to cover the nearest of the creatures as it came lumbering out from the dark fringe of the forest. It was a rat. At least, it had once been a rat, the sort of rodent that would have skulked in barns and outbuildings and moist cellars. But that was before the Rad Cygnus had burned its way into the genetic codes of its ancestors. Now, several generations over the long winters and the subsequent century had changed it into the monstrous apparition that fumbled its way onto the blacktop, less than 30 yards from Ryan.
"By the three Kennedys!"
It moved slowly, its overgrown claws ticking on the gravel. Its pelt was a bizarre cross between scales and fur, oddly charred. The tail was covered in leprous patches of flaking, infected skin. Its head turned slowly from side to side, trembling with some kind of frightful ague. The skull was blackened and elongated, earless, ending in a running sore where the nose would have been on a normal animal. The hooded eyes were pale yellow, crusted with a hard white froth. Its lower jaw was underslung, gaping open with a triple row of stained, serrated teeth showing between the swollen, obscenely delicate pink lips. Ryan guessed that its body was around 4 feet in length, with an extra 5 or 6 feet of twitching tail.
"Watch your left!"
The two other monstrous rodents crept slowly out from the undergrowth to join the other muti, and all three stood together, their weeping eyes locked on the seven invaders into their territory. Ryan looked cautiously around, checking that there didn't seem to be any more of the giant rats, trying to decide whether it was best to let them go unharmed, or to wipe the face of the earth a little cleaner by killing them. There was always the risk of gunshots attracting the wrong kind of interest. The muti rats didn't seem able to decide what to do either. Threaten or retreat?
"Let's terminate them now.
They're monsters, Dad!"
The rats were so disgusting that Ryan felt his instincts taking over from common sense. The Sig Sauer had a built-in baffle silencer that he'd replaced some months earlier. It wasn't as efficient as it once had been, but it was still better than nothing.
"I'll take them. Mildred, stand ready to pick up anything I miss. Once I start shooting, there's no turning back."
The three creatures were still huddled together. Their golden eyes were oddly dead, showing no emotion, like a great white shark's. The long, crusted tails were whipping from side to side, as though they were considering making a charge.
"Fire blast!"
Ryan leveled the pistol, steadying his right wrist with his left hand, standing in the middle of the blacktop, his legs slightly apart, and the classic shootist's crouch. He fired, and the first of the powerful 9mm rounds hit the leading rat through the side of the head, just below the dripping orifice where its left ear would have been. The jolt of the explosion ran clear to Ryan's shoulder, but the noise of the shot was satisfyingly muffled. The muti rolled on its side, legs kicking up a spray of slurried mud, blood jetting from its shattered skull, shards of bone dappling the ground. Ryan didn't wait to see how successful his shot had been. He knew that it was a terminal hit. Shifting his aim a little to the left, he centered the foresight on the throat of the second of the monster rodents. He hit his target dead on. A third full metal jacketed bullet hit the last of the vile trio in the chest, as it began to turn toward Ryan. In less than 5 seconds, all three of the muti rats were down and done for. Ryan holstered his blaster.
Pretty good shooting, Lover.
Sound of the shot shouldn't have traveled too far through the thick trees. Not with a silencer.
And then, a fourth rat came rushing out of the shadows of the forest, a little behind the group of friends, heading straight toward Ryan. The muti resembled a scuttling burned log, its clawed feet kicking up the slimy mud. Its razor teeth were bared, saliva drooling over the matted hair of its muscular chest.
Shit!
Mildred was quickest to react. She hadn't holstered her target revolver, but was still holding it by the checked grips, the barrel pointing down at her side.
Mine!
She dodged to the right to avoid shooting Doc, and brought the blaster up to aim. But she hadn't taken into account the treacherousness of the earth under her combat boots, and she slipped over to her left, momentarily off balance.
Oh, damn it!
She triggered off a .38 caliber round at the charging muti rat, but the bullet gouged up a chunk of dirt 6 or 7 inches from the questing muzzle, making the creature jink sideways and hesitate for a moment.
Ryan!
Ryan was reaching for his own blaster as he saw his death closing in on him, crazed yellow eyes fixed to his face, greasy fur glistening with dampness. The moment's hesitation gave Mildred the fraction of a second that she needed. Still unsteady, she snapped off a second round at the giant rat, the bullet narrowly missing the base of the skull where she'd aimed. But it still hit home in the left shoulder, knocking the creature over, rolling and squealing in the trampled dirt. It was less than 6 feet from Ryan, and it was simple for him to aim at the writhing creature and put a big 9mm round through its spine, which killed it instantly. Ryan turned to Mildred as he replaced the Sig Sauer in its holster.
Good shooting, Mildred. Thanks.
Oh, Jesus. You're welcome. Big fuckers. Biggest I ever saw.
Same here.
Ryan stood still and quiet, listening for any sound of activity from anywhere around them. But the noise of the shooting and the dying animals' cries had driven the wildlife into silence.
Oh, bless me, Father, for I have sinned.
Don't start that again, Doc. Just seal it in a can, will you?
Apologies, my dear doctor.
Now what, Lover?
Head on for Mom's place and try her advertised jerky.
Oh, yeah.
The companions hadn't covered much territory when the armorer stopped, head to one side, taking in several deep breaths.
Now that smells real good. Sets the old taste buds tingling.
Mom's jerky?
Gotta be.
With baked potatoes or creamed rice or a mess of whipped potatoes or refried beans.
That's enough, son. But it sure does smell fine.
The heady aroma of cooking meat was drifting through the pines from almost directly ahead of them. Accompanying it, there was a faint haze of whitish smoke hanging at the level of the drooping lower branches. As they stood there, grouped close together, they all heard it. It sounded about 50 yards away.
Gotta be Mom's place. Let's go see what it's like. Now let's keep alert out there.
It was a squat log cabin. The roof looked like it had collapsed several times, and on each occasion had been rebuilt with a little less care and attention. Moss grew thick between the heavy timbers, and fungus sprouted all down along the broken guttering. There was a hitching rail just outside the lopsided front porch, with 3 spavined mares and a crookback mule tethered there. A hand-painted sign, cracked and heavily weather-stained, was nailed to the wall by the single cobwebbed window and proclaimed a single word, Mom. The door was ajar, and Ryan, leading the others, pushed his way inside the small restaurant. It took a few moments to acclimate his vision to the darkness. There were about 6 tables, each one with a smoking oil lamp at its center. Half of them were occupied. At first glance, it didn't look like there was a woman in the place. 2 men sat at the table nearest the door, middle-aged, wearing a ragged assortment of furs. The next table had a single man, much older, white-bearded, dressed in sober black. The last table had a trio of younger men, all of whom wore white cotton shirts and pants of light-brushed denim. Ryan noticed that they each wore identical chisel-toed western boots and polished black snakeskin. From habit, he also noticed what kind of weaponry was on display. The pair of hunters had long-barreled Kentucky muskets leaning against the wall by their chairs. The older man didn't appear to be carrying a blaster, but Ryan had a sneaking suspicion that he might be sporting a hideaway Derringer, spring-loaded against his forearm. The trio at the last table didn't seem to be wearing any sort of blasters at all.
Ha! Strangers!
The voice floated out from the darkness behind the bar that ran along the farther wall of the cabin, and carried the flavor of too many black cigars and too much bootleg liquor. Ryan rested his hand informally on the butt of the Sig Sauer.
Hi there. This'd be Mom's place, would it?
This downright would, mister. And what's more to the point, I would be Mom.
The figure moved sideways into the light of a gently swinging brass lamp. Mom was close to 5 feet 10 inches tall and looked like she tipped the scale somewhere around the 250 mark. Her grizzled hair was cropped shorter than that of most men, and she wore a plaid shirt about 3 sizes too small, bursting open across the front. Ryan put her at about 40 years of age, with the etched lines around her mouth and puffy, watery eyes that bespoke a heavy drinker.
Seen enough, mister.
Didn't mean to stare, lady. Just that you're about the first human we've seen for quite a few days. You serve food here? Jerky?
Seen the signs, have you? Well, I like to say this is the best jerky east of the Pacific Ocean, right here on God's little acre.
Sounds good. What's it come with?
What would you like it to come with?
Beans and a heap of whipped potatoes.
Christ on a mule, child. You white as a ghost. When the Lord Jesus made you, he must have been having a kind of an off day.
Amen to that.
It was the thinnest of the 3 young men in the snakeskin boots who spoke, but all of them made the sign of the cross afterwards, eyes never leaving the companions. Ryan noticed that each of the trappers had shifted a little in their chairs, to be that much closer to their flintlock muskets.
Don't think that's funny.
Jack's hand was a long way off from the butt of his Colt Python, but it was near enough to the taped hilt of one of his concealed throwing knives.
Take it easy, Jack. No point in forcing blood.
The woman sensed the sudden tension and moved a couple of steps to her right, her hands disappearing behind the bar. Ryan would have staked a fistful of Jack that she had a sawed-down scattergun there.
Everything cool, strangers?
Everything's fine. Dry-handed. All right if we sit down?
Sure. Make yourself at home. Jerky and beans, cream potatoes all around?
Sounds fine.
One of the trappers leaned forward in his seat as the companions arranged themselves at 2 of the remaining tables.
You come far, mister?
Far enough. We're traders. Barter in clothes of all sorts. Had us some bad luck. Lost our rig in a swollen river about 3 days back, south of here.
The woman had been on her way through a pair of dirty batwing doors toward the kitchen out back, but now she halted.
That mean you're out of Jack?
No.
Sure?
Sure, I'm sure.
Well, we had us some trouble with outlanders. Ate their fill and then sat there calling the sunshine on a cloudy day and told me they couldn't pay.
What happened to them?
They paid.
The taller of the trappers finished the dregs of a mug in front of him.
Everyone has to pay at Mom's place. One fucking way or another.
While the trappers had their laugh, Ryan observed that none of the 3 younger men at the table together had shown a flicker of expression since they had entered. The trappers rose and picked up their muskets.
You boys done? Wanted at it on your slate?
Yeah, Mom. Be good. We'll be back in 10 days, unless the Apaches get us first.
You got Indian trouble around here?
Some. Say, that's some right pretty hair you got there, Missy. Closest thing I ever saw to a tumble of living fire.
The heathen are losing their race against the forces of righteousness. Amen.
The other 2 young men nodded firmly in agreement and crossed themselves again.
Any of you fellas have anything to do with the Children of the Rock?
There was a sudden stillness in the eatery that you could have carved wafer thin. The hunters stopped right by the door, faces turned from Ryan to Mom to the trio of men. The old-timer was frozen in the act of sipping at a chipped cup of coffee sub.
You mean us, Outlander?
Us?
If the cap fits.
Meaning?
Meaning that we've been seeing all sorts of signs on walls for the Children of the Rock. Look like we're some kind of religiousville. You 3 keep praying and crossing yourselves, so it seemed more than possible that you might all have something to do with the Children of the Rock. Whoever they are.
Good guess, Outlander. These young...
The prattle of an empty-minded woman is like the shaking of a hollow gourd.
Well, now, I was only gonna...
Only is the first step on the trail to the bottomless swamps of heathen eternity, Mrs. Fairchild. Best you say no more. Go cook the jerky for these folks.
Mom shrugged, half-heartedly wiping at the bar top. A gust of cold air swept into the room as the front door opened and closed behind the two trappers. The old man dabbed at his mouth with a linen kerchief and rose to make his way out. He hesitated, as though he was going to say something, then changed his mind and walked out in silence, leaving behind a handful of small jack on his table. Mom turned and went out into the kitchen. Ryan turned his attention back to the three men.
Guess my hearing's getting poor. Didn't catch the answer to my question about the Children of the Rock.
One of them, with a trimmed mustache, smiled, but it got nowhere near his pale blue eyes.
You know that the cat found itself burning on the barbecue from asking too many questions, stranger.
What are you frightened of?
Frightened? What in the name of the Almighty makes you think that?
I can see it in your faces, sense it in the way you're sitting. Your whole body language speaks to me of very deep unease.
No, lady, you got it wrong. I'll be glad to tell you about the Children of the Rock. Yeah, we're all proud to be members of the flock. We aren't a vill, not like most in Deathlands, just some right-thinking folks collected together under the strong arm of the blessed Jesus Christ and his angelic host.
Fundamentalists?
The thin young man, obviously their main spokesman, flashed a cold, self-righteous look Mildred's way.
A well-honed sword will smite the ungodly better than a whole library of good thoughts.
None of you carry swords, no blasters neither.
Not here. We're close enough to our heartland to be safe from the threat of the Apaches.
Paramilitary survivalists. You were around in my days, folks like you. Back then, most of you were just stinking redneck racists. All you lack are hoods, sheets, and blazing crosses. If you're white, it's all right. If you're black, get back. Hiding hatred behind a blurred version of the Gospels. Is that what the Children of the Rock are up to?
The three men seemed taken aback at the surge of rage from Mildred. Their leader's face paled.
Why, no. That is, our leader is Brother Joshua Wolfe, and he doesn't turn anybody away on account of color. We preach tolerance for those that walk the true path.
I reckon that before you attack us, you should come see us. See our camp. Meet Brother Joshua.
Yes. The shroud of ignorance is a darkening thing to bear. Come and let us rip it aside. Then you can walk in the bright light of love.
Sure. Been trying to do that for too many years.
We are members of the Children of the Rock. Outlanders who are pure in heart are always welcome. Providing, of course, that they prove themselves acceptable. We are going there shortly. Why not walk with us?
Not right now, thanks. We need a meal and then a bed for the night. This place provide overnights?
Mom's head appeared at the double doors, showing that she had preternaturally sharp hearing.
It does. Fix a price for y'all, depending on how many rooms you want. Food won't be too long a coming.
The three men stood with a strange synchronicity, tucking their chairs neatly in place. Their leader smiled at Ryan and the others.
Brother Joshua Wolfe will welcome you, perhaps after the dawning.
Perhaps. It's near?
Oh, yes. It's only a few minutes' walk farther along the winding old blacktop. You can't possibly miss it. There will be sentries on watch on the road. There always are. The Children of the Rock have many good friends and a scattering of hostile enemies.
Like the Apaches?
Yes, brother. Like the spawn of Shaitan. Farewell, then. Until tomorrow.
All three of the young men paused by the door and made a strange circular motion with thumb and forefinger of the right hand.
Be seeing you.
The scent of food was growing ever stronger, making Ryan lick his lips. He poured himself a tumbler of water. Doc, brandishing his kerchief, wiped away beads of sweat forming on his forehead.
Seem friendly. Very amicable fellows.
Yeah, about as friendly as sun-warmed rattlers.
Can't say I took to them myself, but I reckon it could be interesting to go take a look at their vill tomorrow.
You all right, Doc?
I confess to feeling a little below par, dear friend. A touch of influenza would be my self-diagnosis, but I shall doubtless be myself on the morrow.
Could do with a bath.
I reckon that could be arranged. But let's get the meal done with first.
At that moment, the batwing doors clattered open, and Mom, red-faced and perspiring, pushed her way through, carrying a big tray loaded with plates of food. The seven companions looked pleasantly stunned as the food was placed before them on the tables. Creamed potatoes, slender green beans sodden with salted butter, a large gravy boat brimming with a delicious-smelling creamy sauce, four loaves of piping hot bread resting on wooden platters, and the coup de grace, flat dishes of flower-patterned china holding mountains of Mom Fairchild's famous jerky. The crew fell to with a gusto of hounds at supper and barely came up for air. Conversation was held to a strict minimum, as it only deterred them from the task at hand. The great dishes of sun-dried strips of meat, some of them honey-roasted and some smoked, were mouth-wateringly good, tender and chewy, with an exquisite flavor that lingered long on the palate. Nearly an hour later, Christy leaned back in her chair, wiping at her chin with a stained linen napkin. She looked at her empty plate, then at the large array of empty serving bowls that stood in the middle of the table.
That was so good.
Anyone fancy some puddings?
What do you got?
Pecan pie, pecan pie with cream, pecan pie and lime jelly, hot pecan pie, and there's some peach and cherry cobbler, hot or cold, with or without.
Well, the spirit's willing, Mom, but I'm not sure the body can take another mouthful.
I tried a pecan pie, peach cherry cobbler, with cream and lime jelly.
Me too!
You two are living proof that you can get a quart into a pint pot. I seriously don't know why you two haven't burst. You must have had at least three helpings of the jerky apiece.
Four! Anyone else for dessert?
I guess I'll just have to try a sliver of the pie with cream. How about you, lover?
No thanks. I know when I've had enough. And right now, I've had enough.
Well, just a glass of water for me, if you please. And maybe some coffee sub.
Sure thing. Anyone else? No?
No, ma'am. But I just want you to know that was the finest damn jerky I ever tasted. What kind of meat you use for that?
Varies. Sometimes I use prime beef. Hard to get hold of up here in the hills. Goat's real good. Old guy lives down the trail a piece, has some he feeds on milk. Tender as hand-reared veal, but with a mite more flavor. Then there's often some tasty pork in there.
Lamb or mutton? Some of it had a real unique texture.
Not often. Could be venison jerky that you had. Those hunters bring me some now and then. Even tried beaver, but it was kind of tough. Back flavor of fish to it. Sometimes I just mix it up and serve it however. Kind of potluck as it comes. All right, folks, I'll be right back with your dessert.
Mom Fairchild beamed brightly, her sleeves wound almost up to her shoulders, revealing her muscular arms. She turned on her heel and disappeared once more into the steamy kitchen. The armorer leaned back in the seat and eased the buckle on his belt by a notch.